This is Women of Grace Live, discussing issues important to your life and faith. Spiritual insight, practical wisdom. Join us as we transform the world one woman at a time. Women of Grace, for such a time as this. Now, here's your host, Johnette Williams.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams, very happy to be with you today. Always enjoy spending this time with you, Monday through Friday, right here on EWTN Radio, brought to you by so many great affiliates throughout the United States and beyond, as well as various other platforms. We invite you to join us here at Women of Grace Live, as I say, Monday through Friday, via the way in which you're listening to us today, or via one of the affiliates that is right there in your own area. I do want to remind you, too, to check out our website, womenofgrace.com. We have all kinds of great, great resources available for you there. Certainly want to invite you to go out and shop at our little store for a lot of the things that we talk about right here on Women of Grace Live. Additionally, check out our blogs and be sure to look at our events page. It tells you where I'm going to be and it tells you what we're going to be hosting as Women of Grace in our various conferences and retreats, our Benedicta Leadership Enrichment Seminar that we do a couple of times a year in different locations, as well as the Benedicta Institute for Women. Certainly looking forward to having you stop by and visit us there. Also want to remind you when you get out to that website that we've got a really great opportunity for you that's called Women of Grace Exclusive. It's a subscribership program, and all of the archives of our programming, both through the Abundant Life as well as through Women of Grace, additionally, all of our podcasts for radio and our webinars, the various conference talks and retreat talks, all of that is available for you out there as a Women of Grace exclusive subscriber. You can watch all of it for just pennies a day, really. So we invite you to subscribe. By doing so, not only do you have the benefit of all of the good material that's there, but additionally, you help to support our mission to transform the world one woman at a time. And boy, oh boy, if ever there was a time when the world needed transforming, it is today. And God's given you life at this moment in the history of man that you might wield a mighty impact in this history of man that's been entrusted to us for this moment. So we do want to do everything that we can to help you be the woman that God's created you to be. And gentlemen, for you to be the man that God's created you to be too. So get on out there and take a look at what we've got available for you. Today is one of those days when we're not going to be taking any calls. We're not going to be offering you the opportunity to chit-chat with us out there in social media because we've got a fabulous guest that we want to get to today. This is a man that I've known for a number of years. I had the great opportunity of interviewing over the course of those years, both on Women of Grace as well as the series on EWTN that preceded it for 17 years called The Abundant Life. And Dr. Peter Kleponis has a very unique mission in the world today. And that unique mission is to help people to overcome addictions and primarily to overcome the addiction to pornography. And I would say, I don't know if he would say this, but I would say this, I think that he's a leading expert, maybe the leading expert on pornography addiction and the means by which this addiction can be overcome. And marriages can be restored and the individual's own sense of self can be restored because pornography robs all of that from a person and creates very difficult moments within marital life and really within moments of managing life in general. We're going to be talking about all of that today with our guest, Dr. Peter Kleponis. Want to let you know that he has been on EWTN, as I mentioned, with Women of Grace as well as The Abundant Life, but he's been on too with Joy and Jim Pinto on their program, At Home with Joy and Jim, or Jim and Joy. I always want to confuse that, At Home with Jim and Joy. But in addition to that, he has also has resources available for you out there at EWTN's Religious Catalog. And I want to encourage you to get out there and buy these books because here's the fact of the matter. If you do not struggle with pornography within the confines of your own home, chances are that somebody you know is struggling with pornography. It could be an extended family member. It could be a dear friend. It could be somebody in the workplace. It could be somebody that you know from your parish setting. And these books can certainly begin to inspire a person, give a person hope, begin to offer a process of restoration that is absolutely essential for this. So I want to give you these books, and I'll be mentioning them throughout the course of the program. So if you don't get them down right here at the get-go, do not worry. I'll be giving the titles again. Restoring Trust and Integrity Restored, both written by our guest today, Dr. Peter Kleponis. You can also go out to two websites that he has, one for his not-for-profit organization, Integrity Restored, all one word, integrityrestored.com, and also his own website, Peter Kleponis, that's K-L-E-P as in Paul, O-N-I-S, peterkleponis.com. Both websites give you a lot of information and will certainly shed some light on this most devastating problem that we are facing today. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to our guest today, Dr. Peter Kleponis. Dr. Peter Kleponis, welcome to Women of Grace Live. We're happy to have you with us today.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's wonderful to be back again.
Well, thanks. It's great to have you back, too. And, you know, this problem, I would have hoped that we would have had a better handle on this problem in the culture in the period of time that we haven't had a chance to chat with each other. But unfortunately, I think it's become exacerbated. And we know that we're really facing very, very serious, devastating effects as a result of it. And I want you to tell us just a little bit about yourself and how it was that you got involved in being this expert that you are on pornography addiction.
Well, I kind of fell into it. You know, when I began practicing over 20 years ago, I decided that I wanted to, work with Catholic, our Catholic faith into the healing process because I knew that's where God could really work. So, you know, for many years, I worked with individuals and couples and families and so forth. And I guess, maybe about 11 years ago, I noticed a shift in my clientele. More men were coming to me struggling with pornography addiction. In fact, for the married men, it was often their wives that were calling up seeking help. And so I saw this trend, and I decided to do some research, and what I discovered was this huge epidemic of internet pornography addiction going on. But nobody wanted to talk about it. It was such a taboo topic. No one would touch it with a 10-foot pole, but I was getting all these clients, so I realized, okay, you know, these people need help. So, I went back to school and retooled and got certified to treat sexual addictions for over 10 years now. You know, this has been my specialization, and it's really been my passion because I see how, number one, how devastating pornography can be to individuals and marriages, but I also know that healing is possible, and with God's help, you know, lives and marriages can be restored and made stronger than ever. So you know, there's a lot of good news here, but, you know, in the meantime, there are a lot of marriages and individual lives that are just being destroyed by this.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you share with us about the way in which you got involved in this, the good news is that these people did come to you, you know, because so many people won't bring this issue up. There is a social taboo that even though we live in this very sexualized culture that we live in, there still is a shame portion of this that would hold somebody back. And what we want to do today, friends, is encourage you. If you're struggling with pornography, if your spouse is struggling with pornography, please seek the help that you need. And I want to recommend Dr. Peter Kleponis to you. Again, his website is integrityrestored.com or his own website, Peter Kleponis, K-L-E-P-O-N-I-S.com. More with the good doctor when we come back from our break. Women of Grace Live is on the air for you today. Stay with us. Well, Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnnet Williams, happy to be with you today and absolutely delighted that we have our guest with us, Dr. Peter Klaponis. We're going to be talking about sexual addiction, specifically pornography addiction, as we move through our program today, and it may not be suitable for young ears, so we just want to give you a heads up about that. Also want to give you a heads up that we're not receiving any calls today, nor are we taking any messages coming in from social media. We want to give this time to Dr. Peter Klaponis to talk with us about this most serious topic. Prior to the break, he was sharing with us a little bit about how it was that he found himself involved through his practice in helping people with pornography. He went back to school, and as he put it, he got retold and certified in sexual addictions, and this has become his passion. And he's seen many successes. So the good news is there can be success in quelling this addiction and learning how to use very good behavioral techniques as well as the sacraments of the faith to help you to overcome it. So if you're struggling with addiction, this program is for you. Want you to know that help is there for you. Want to give you a couple of websites that you can use. Integrity Restored. Integrity Restored is the website for Dr. Peter Klaponis' not-for-profit corporation by that same title. And in addition to that, you can go to his own personal website. It's his name, Peter Klaponis, K-L-E-P-O-N-I-S. PeterKlaponis.com. Sending you also out to EWTN's religious catalog, the home of Holy Reminders, EWTNRC.com. Two books are there for you that Dr. Klaponis has written, Integrity Restored and Restoring Trust. Integrity Restored and Restoring Trust. Both of them are excellent. Both of them can certainly help for you to begin this process of renewal and restoration that God wants in mind for you. You know, Peter, I'm thinking right now, and I've been thinking about this since we began our conversation today, that Our Lady came to Sister Lucia, the one seer of Fatima, who lived, you know, well into her many senior years. I think she was in her 90s when she passed away. Our Lady had appeared to her at some point when she was in Carmel and told her that the final battle would be against marriage and the family. And while we live in this sexualized culture and we promote, you know, a lifestyle that is certainly outside of the laws of God, one that is very hedonistic in its own ways, one that is very cult of the body oriented. We know that there is a destructive effect on the family as a result of pornography. And I want you to share with us a little bit about, you know, how this addiction gets set up in a person. Some say it's really not an addiction, but yet there's a lot of research that says this indeed is an addiction.
Oh, yes. You know, the neuroscience evidence clearly points to this as an addiction. You know, they've taken brain scans of cocaine addicts and compared them to sex addicts, and the scans are identical. The pleasure control center of the brain is hyperstimulated, while the impulse control center, the part of the brain that says stop, is disengaged. So, you know, when that need for that fix comes, the ability to say no is completely lost. The person loses their free will with this.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, when we look at the pornography use, you know, it's whenever I look at an addiction, I look at it as two sides of a coin. On the one side, you have the physical side, where the person becomes physically addicted to this. And we know that's what's happened. You know, when a person looks at an erotic image, there's a rush of dopamine in the brain, which provides a sense of good feelings and excitement and pleasure. And this can be very highly addictive. For men, it's looking at the visual pornography. Women are, you know, much more complicated than men. It's not just the visual pornography. Women are more relationally oriented. So for women, it can be the visual pornography, but it can also be pornographic chat rooms and blogs and webcams and things like that. For women, it's often the erotic promise of a relationship that draws them in. But either way, it gets these chemicals flowing in the brain that, you know, it's as I said, similar to being on drugs. You get that high, that pleasurable sensation that the brain wants to go back to over and over and over again, and the brain can become dependent on that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a physical component. Now, on the other side of the coin, we have the emotional side. And what often happens, it's very simple. A person is often introduced to pornography, usually in their childhood or early adolescent years, and they know that it's wrong, they know that it's shameful, they shouldn't do it, but still there's a thrill to it, it's fun, it's exciting, you know, the forbidden fruit. And there's this little voice deep down inside that says, hey, this is a good escape. This makes us feel good. This makes us forget all of our problems. Let's go back to this to feel good. So from now on, any time we're sad, bored, burnt out, frustrated, angry, abandoned, ashamed, lonely, depressed, you name it, we're going to go back to this because this is the express train to pleasure. Unfortunately, the effects are temporary, and because of that, a person needs to go back to it over and over and over again to keep that pain at bay. This is where we get the term self-medicating. Now, are they aware that they're doing this? No. All they know is they like to look at porn like everyone else. But this is where they then become emotionally dependent on pornography to keep their pain at bay. And, of course, the more they keep going back to the pornography for that, the more the physical side also has a chance to kick in and take hold. So it's both physical and emotional that come in here. You know, and, of course, there's also a spiritual element, too, where Satan comes in and says, hey, this is what's going to make you happy. This is what's going to fulfill you. And we know in the long run it doesn't, but still we keep going back to it.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple of questions for you. I know that statistically, some years ago when I did some research on this topic, the number of women who were participating in pornography was significantly less than the number of men participating in pornography. Have you seen those numbers coming more together?
Those numbers are increasing.
Mm-hmm.
They are increasing. You know, 10 years ago, the research we had, which was very, very rudimentary research, you know, we found that almost a third of all women pornographic viewers were women. Now we're looking up to around 40%, and it's probably higher than that because there's no way we can really accurately measure this. But we know that this is becoming a real problem with women. It used to be thought, you know, this is like alcoholism 80 years ago where they thought only men became alcoholics, women didn't. Well, it used to be thought that only men became addicted to pornography and women didn't. Well, now we know this is an equal opportunity drug that people are becoming addicted to. The sad part is that for women, the shame is far greater than for men.
Mm-hmm.
So a man becomes addicted to pornography, he comes forth and says, help, I'm addicted, I need help. People think, okay, yeah, well, what do you expect? He's a guy, this is what happens to men. But when a woman comes forward and says, help, I'm addicted to pornography, she gets all kinds of terrible labels placed on her. I won't even mention them on the radio, but we all know what they are. So because of the shame, a lot of the women who are struggling with this addiction never come forward to seek help, and they suffer in silence.
The second question I had for you is, the fact of the matter is with a drug, as we know, the amount of drug needed to get that sense of euphoria, the abandonment of all of problems and stress increases over time. Is there a similar effect with the use of pornography?
Exactly. As with any other addiction, after a while, a tolerance develops. A little isn't enough. You need more of the drug to get the same effect, and you need a stronger form of the drug to get the same effect. So instead of spending maybe 20 minutes once a week viewing pornography, a person may be looking at it several times a week for an hour or more. And the type of pornography becomes more extreme. You know, the soft pornography, or what we call the vanilla sex, is no longer satisfying. So they go on to more hardcore forms of pornography, more deviant, more dangerous and violent forms of pornography, even illegal forms of pornography they're looking at. Not that they really want to engage in that type of sexuality. It's simply that they need a stronger form of the drug.
You know, when we talk about the destructive influence that this has on a family, I mean, walk us through the life of an individual, if you could, who is introduced to pornography as a young child, finds that this becomes a soothing way to escape from pain, from trauma, from, you know, a sense of stress or whatever the case is, and then becomes someone who starts to use pornography on a more consistent basis. How does the typical, and I know that everybody is an individual, but is there a type of pattern that begins to develop in their life that ultimately takes them to this harder core kind of, you know, porn and beyond?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, as I said, you know, it usually starts with using pornography. You know, there's a thrill and excitement in it, but also to deal with negative emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So a young person is introduced, you know, often in their late childhood or early adolescent years, and they realize that this makes them feel good. So anytime they're dealing with negative emotions, they want to go back to this. Now, those negative emotions can be caused by major traumas in their lives, you know, growing up in a home where there's abuse or addiction or divorce or something like that, or it could just be a lot of little things that have added up over the years. You know, and they've conditioned themselves to turn to pornography whenever they're dealing with a negative emotion. All right. So this is what they start doing. Now, the really important part here is that what enters into their lives at that point is shame.
Mm-hmm.
Credible shame, because they know this is wrong, but they can't talk to anybody about this. You know, they certainly can't talk to mom and dad about this, because they're afraid of how mom and dad will react. You know, will they reject them? So they find themselves, you know, becoming addicted to this, you know, going back to it to keep that pain at bay, one of those pains being the shame. But the shame perpetuates it and keeps it hidden in the dark, where it grows and grows and just festers through the years. So then, you know, as the child grows and, you know, kids today, they're using computers, they're using their cell phones, they're using technology, social media all the time. They just become more and more engrossed in this pornographic culture to the point where it just gets totally out of hand. And they may end up doing things that are very dangerous, like engaging in dangerous sexual behaviors with other people, engaging in dangerous illegal behaviors, and so forth. But it's the combination of having that addiction with the shame together that keeps them trapped in this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Usually isn't until something really bad happens, until some crisis occurs, that they're finally able to get the help that they need, and, you know, to really be able to let go of that shame and, you know, and really embrace their worth as a person. Because, you know, in this addiction, what we find is that, you know, addicted people generally tend to develop 5 unhealthy core beliefs about themselves. And they are, 1, I'm unlovable. 2, if people really knew me or knew what I was doing, they would reject me. 3, I can't count on anyone, even God, to meet my needs. So 4, I need to find something that I can control that'll meet my needs. And therefore, 5, pornography and sex is my greatest need and source of comfort.
Mm.
And you can see this all fueled by shame. And so biggest challenge in recovery is letting go of that shame. And one of the ways we do that is embracing the truth about our identity in Christ, being beloved children of the Father. People lose sight of that, you know, and the sense that, you know, yes, we sin, yes, we fall, but we never lose that value, and we never lose God's love.
You know, I'm thinking about young people. I'm thinking about people that are beginning a life together, and I would encourage anyone who is seeing someone right now, and you have any suspicions that pornography is part of it, to have a discussion about that prior to moving forward in a relationship. I get a lot of people that will call here on radio, Peter, who are asking questions about, you know, are there signs for this kind of a thing, or, you know, should I marry this person, or, you know, I'm communicating with somebody through, you know, a dating site right now, and what are some of the key things I should be looking for? So are there any identifying factors with regard to someone who is addicted to pornography?
Okay. Well, first of all, couples need to talk about this. They need to have this discussion. You know, talk about pornography, the problem of pornography in our culture, you know, and how this can negatively affect their relationship. And I guarantee you, most couples have never had this conversation. But you know, if you're dating someone and you talk about pornography and you find that they see nothing wrong with it, there's a red flag. Right? There's a definite red flag there. You know, and then in a relationship, you know, there needs to be total honesty, total transparency with everything, which means I can tell you in my relationship, in my marriage, my wife can pick up my phone or my computer at any time, go in, take a look at anything I'm doing. All right, totally open.
Right.
You know, everything needs to be monitored. You know, I talk about Covenant Eyes, which is a software program used for monitoring use of the internet. We've got that on all of our devices. All right, and again, total transparency with everything. You know, my wife can see everything I do. I can see everything she does on that. So if there is a problem, if something does happen, you know, it can be addressed immediately. But first of all, you know, we need to have that conversation, talk about your beliefs, talk about, you know, how pornography can affect a marriage, you know, and I often talk to couples about this, and even for people who are on the fence, you know, one of my questions is, well, if you have children, do you want children in a house with pornography? And 99% of the time they say no. I say, okay, we got to get it out of here. So, and then we can talk more about how it's going to affect their marriage.
Mm-hmm. You know, and these are important discussions to have. And, you know, I think that oftentimes these kinds of problems are not discovered until after the marriage. And then when we come back from our break, I want to talk a little bit about what signs a spouse might see that would indicate that the person they're married to is struggling or having a problem in this area. And I would also guess, too, Peter, that one of the reasons why these conversations are so difficult to have and why there might be deception involved is for the very factor that you pointed out earlier. And that is that shame factor. And so at some point in time, you know, through the course of our program today, I want you to give us some indicators on and some helps and hints on how we can begin to let go of that shame so that an honest conversation can be had and help can be attained. So those are some of the things that we're going to pick up on when we come back from our break today. And friends, I want to give you some information where you can go to get more from Dr. Peter Klaponis. He's got two websites. One is integrityrestored.com. That is the name of his not-for-profit corporation. It's a great website with all kinds of valuable help and all kinds of valuable insight. And we want you to get out there and take a look at it, integrityrestored.com. In addition to that, Dr. Klaponis has his own website. And that website is Peter Klaponis, K-L-E-P-O-N-I-S. Dr. Peter, it's peterklaponis.com. That is Dr. Peter Klaponis' own website. We want you to check that out. And we want you to get out there to EWTN's religious catalog. That's EWTNRC.com. You will find two books of his available for you there. One, the name of his organization, Integrity Restored, and another, Restoring Trust. And that is something that's very, very important. I want to get to that, too, in the second part of our program today with our guest, Dr. Peter Klaponis. If you are struggling in this way, get out to these websites, get the books, give Dr. Peter Klaponis a call, see how it is that he can help you. More for you here on Women of Grace Live. When we come back from our break, we're inviting you to stay with us, not taking calls today, not taking any of your chat featured questions either. Just stay with us on air today with our guest. We're going to be right back inviting you to stay with us. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I'm Johnette Williams. Very happy to be with you today and delighted that we have with us our guest, Dr. Peter Klaponis. We're talking about a sensitive topic today. We're talking about sexual addiction, especially as it relates to pornography addiction. And it might not be a suitable conversation that we're having today for young ears. We just want to give you a heads up about that. Also want to let you know that we're not taking any phone calls today, nor are we going out to social media. I want to get as much information out of the good doctor as we possibly can. And I do want you to know that he does have two websites. I want you to get to them both, integrityrestored.com. That is integrityrestored.com, all one word, integrityrestored.com. And then Dr. Klaponis also has his own website under his name, Peter Klaponis. That's spelled K-L-E-P, as in Paul, O-N-I-S.com. PeterKlaponis.com. Two books available for you, two out there at EWTN's religious catalog, Integrity Restored, written by our guest today, as well as his other book, Restoring Trust, both of which are extremely helpful and useful to individuals that are dealing with this problem. Now, Peter, when we went to the break, we were talking about the use of pornography within a marriage and how devastating that can be, why it's important to make certain that that's not an issue prior to marriage. But if you suspect pornography addiction, or if it's something that comes up after the marriage, are there some kinds of signs that we can look for or begin to determine that this issue is taking place with our spouse?
Well, yes, there are several signs. First of all, you're noticing that your spouse is isolating with technology. So it could be the man who comes home from work and after dinner goes into his home office, closes the door, and spends hours in there. not being with the family, or, you know, the woman who goes into the bathroom with her cell phone and spends extended periods of time in there with it. So they're isolating themselves with technology, you know, not really saying what they're doing, being very secretive about that. Another thing is that emotionally they become very distant and very guarded. And that's often because they are dealing with a lot of shame that's associated with this. And many spouses can tell, especially wives. Wives can tell, you know, when their husbands are being very emotionally distant and guarded with that. That's another sign. Moodiness, anger is a part of that. And that goes back to, you know, a lot of the shame and just, unfortunately, a lot of self-hatred that a person will carry because of this addiction. You know, another thing would be, you know, if they're, you know, spending more time away from home, say at the office, you know, claiming to work late when they really don't have to, they may be viewing pornography there. So these are some of the major signs. And of course, the big one is, you know, just simply discovering pornography, either catching the person viewing the pornography or finding it on their phone, their tablet, their computer, you know, seeing what they're doing on social media. Just, you know, oftentimes that's the way it's discovered, is just by accident. But those are some signs.
Typically, you know, this kind of an issue is one that eventually, I think, becomes discovered. But does it impact on the intimate life of the husband and wife?
Oh, it definitely does. Definitely does. Because first of all, it destroys trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here, all this woman who thinks she's known her husband all these years discovers that he's had this deep, dark secret life, and it's a lot of lies and deceit, and that enter into the marriage, and that's very, very painful. So, that trust is destroyed. The ability to feel safe with one another is hurt. Intimacy is damaged with this. All right. Now, normally when people hear the word intimacy, they think sex, and the intimacy is not sex. All right. This is the emotional connection between two people, where you know each other thoroughly, backward, forward, inside out. You know, you can practically read each other's mind and finish each other's sentences. Right. This is what we want to have in a marriage. You cannot have that if someone's hiding a deep, dark secret.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying, well, you have access to 90% of my heart, but there's 10% left over, which has porn in it, I'm not going to give you access to. So it affects the intimacy. It affects the trust. Many women, because they are so hurt by the pornography use, will actually struggle with a condition called betrayal trauma. Mm-hmm. And the symptoms of that are similar to post-traumatic stress disorder. Right? They're very hurt. They feel very betrayed. They feel that they cannot compete with the women in porn. You know, you look at the women in porn, most of them are in their early 20s, and thanks to all the plastic surgery, makeup, and digital enhancements, like, they don't exist in real life, but they have the, quote, perfect bodies. And you have a woman, a wife, who's maybe in her 40s, and she sees that, and she thinks, well, how can I compete? And she feels that her husband is rejecting her and replacing her with the women in pornography. So you can imagine how devastating this actually is to a marriage. So, you know, when you see this is what I want everybody to be aware of, that this isn't simply just a pastime or, you know, adult entertainment. All right, this is something that can really devastate a marriage.
Yeah. When I hear you speaking right now, I'm thinking to myself that it's very likely that we have listeners here who are going through this checklist, basically, that you're offering them and saying, oh, my goodness. You know, I'm afraid that what I have suspected may actually be the case. How would you recommend that spouse begin the process of uncovering this and discussing it with her husband or with the gentleman's wife?
Okay. I know this is a very difficult conversation to have, but, you know, it's really coming forward and saying, look, you know, I'm really scared here. I'm really worried. Something is going on here. You know, is there any pornography use going on? Can I look at your phone? Can I look at your computer? You know, what's happening here? Because I notice you are being distant and you are being secretive and you are isolating with your technology and so forth. And then insisting, you know, let's get something here that can monitor the use of technology. Something like Covenant Eyes, we'll put it on everybody's device in the house, you know, the husband, wife, kids, everybody, so we make sure everything is monitored and we're all safe. And usually through that process, it will come out that somebody is viewing pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And often what I find is that the person who's viewing pornography, deep down inside, actually wants to get caught. Because they know this is affecting their lives. They know this is a terrible thing. They realize the deep shame that they're living with. So for someone to come to them and say, hey, you know, is pornography a problem here? If it is, you know, let's work on it together. And you can do that. And for most spouses, particularly wives, the addiction isn't the problem. They can deal with the addiction. It's the lies and the deceit.
Mm-hmm.
That's what hurts the most. So if someone can come out and just say, yes, this is a problem and I've struggled with it for a long time, you know, just having that honesty really is very healing, and then the two can work on the recovery together.
Yeah. I know that, you know, in your literature, you liken pornography usage to being unfaithful. It's like having an extramarital affair. And it really is, because you are looking at another person in a way, number one, that is dehumanizing to that person. But number two, you're going to an outside source for this intimacy that you are losing with your spouse because of your behavior. And so it is as if there is this extramarital, there's somebody else in the bedroom with you, there's somebody else in the home with you, and it's pure and simple. But for the woman, as you say, this revelation can be outrageously painful and hard. And you talk about this, you know, restoring trust. How do you rebuild trust after it's been so severely damaged through this kind of activity?
Well, restoring trust can take a long time. You know, it could take a couple of years. And it starts by, you know, first of all, the offending spouse admitting everything that he's done. You know, we usually have a disclosure session where we lay everything out on the table, everything that's happened. We work on, you know, offering a sincere and true and complete apology. We work on developing a recovery program. Let's say it's the husband who's addicted. We work on a recovery program for him to recover from the addiction. We work on a recovery program for the wife to recover from the trauma of all this. And then we work with the couple together, working on forgiveness, working on rebuilding the marriage. And it has to be a completely new marriage. You know, some people say, oh, we just want to go back to the way things were. And I say, no, you don't. Because the way things were before wasn't healthy. So, you know, we're creating a whole new marriage, a whole new courtship that is now based on trust and honesty. And from that can grow a healthy relationship. And that does take time. But, you know, it requires things like complete honesty, complete transparency with everything. You know, and not just with pornography or computers, but honesty and transparency with one's time, how they spend their time, how they spend their money. Who they spend their time with, right? And it's not like, you know, we're trying to keep a husband on a short leash or anything. You know, it's just that, as with any marriage, there should be this openness and honesty. So this is what we built into the marriage, into this brand new courtship.
Yeah. And you mentioned that word courtship. It's a beautiful word. I really like that word. And I like the concept of that because it's very different than simply dating. The idea here in a courtship is that you have your eye on the altar and, you know, you're looking at this individual through the lens that I could marry this individual. And so therefore, the actions that are taking place now are very informative and very important for a life that we would seek to build together. And this is why I think it's so very important that even in the courtship, there is that transparency that takes place, right? Because it's the only way to build a good marriage.
Exactly. You know, and of course, God plays a very important role in this, in the healing process, in the forgiveness process. You know, one of the things I have my couples do together is start praying together, even if it's just one decade of the rosary.
Mm-hmm.
Of their marriage, you know, or a Divine Mercy chaplet together. You know, I have couples that will go to adoration together And they'll just sit there in front of the Lord and offer their marriage to the Lord, you know, and it's really trusting God with their marriage that He can, you know, really heal and restore their marriage.
That's right.
Granted, they have their work to do, but it's really entrusting it to God.
That's right. And those sacramental graces of the sacrament of matrimony are available. And, you know, they're not just ideas. They're real. They're realities. It's participation in the divine life. And so to call on those graces, to ask God to release those graces into this moment when, you know, there might be fear or where, you know, a suspicion begins to rise in the heart or any of these things, a temptation presents itself, can be very, very effective. And then acting on those graces. One of the steps that you have outlined on your website is also support and accountability. Talk with us a little bit about that.
Right. Support and accountability is needed for any type of recovery. It's interesting, many years ago, Dr. Patrick Carnes did a study, a longitudinal study with over 1,000 recovering sex addicts to find out what are the top three things needed for successful recovery. And what they found, it was counseling, support and accountability, and a strong spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we talk about support and accountability, this is needed. You know, you can't do this alone. You need to surround yourself with other people who understand the struggle, who are going to be there to support you, keep you accountable, and you do the same for them.
Mm-hmm.
All right? This is a team approach. You know, we talk about the recovery community, and this is what it is, you know, and you know, it can be a very Christ-centered community. That you're there working together, so you're going to meetings and you have a sponsor and you're working the 12 steps. And I love the 12 steps. I recommend everybody go online and read the 12 steps. You're going to find that, number one, they're very Catholic, and number two, it's wisdom for life. Anybody can benefit from it, right? So they're doing that. You know, you have your accountability partners, you know, people you're working with, and you're calling every day saying, hey, how are you doing today? What's going on? And what this does is that it sort of becomes this social laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you think, where can you go and share your deepest, darkest secrets, the things that you are just most shameful of, and people will love and accept you and understand you. I mean, now our church should be like that. Unfortunately, it isn't like that all the time. But that's what these 12-step groups are like. You know, you can go there and bare your soul, and they're going to love you and accept you. And this is where a person can really begin to start letting go of that shame. Right, and start, you know, really, you know, living the life that God wants to live. You know, I was working with a client who the roots of his pornography addiction go back to being sexually abused as a child.
Mm-hmm.
He had never been able to talk about this with anybody. Well, it's through the love and support of the 12-step group that he was finally able to step up and talk about it, and that was incredibly healing for him. You know, and that was part of the shame that he was carrying. And that aided tremendously in his recovery and sobriety. So, you know, the 12-step groups, the support groups that are out there are wonderful. They're amazing. You know, and it's not just the 12-step groups. You know, there are a lot of good ones out there. You know, there are secular ones. There are Christian ones. You know, there's Sexaholics Anonymous, Celebrate Recovery, Exodus 90, many good ones out there. But it's all about getting that support and accountability. You know, not just for yourself, but you know, offering it to others.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing because, you know, sometimes people get involved in this, young people especially get involved in this out of a type of curiosity. But if there is a wound in the heart, then that gives, that basically gives the evil one a place where he can begin to take something that could be a once encounter and begin to use it to become a means by which this person's life becomes destroyed. So if the pornography addiction is long, would you generally say that it's attached to something that needs some serious inner healing, some deep wound of the heart?
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, when we look at people who are struggling with pornography addiction or any addiction, there are usually some very deep, dark wounds that they're self-medicating. Sometimes they've carried them for so long they don't even know they're there. They don't even recognize what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it does take a lot of inner healing, you know, a lot of prayer, a lot of turning to God for that, you know. And God wants to heal us. He wants to heal us of our wounds. And that may take time. But you think, you know, during this whole healing process, you know, God is also calling us to a deeper relationship with Him.
Yeah.
changes.
Yeah, and I'm thinking too that the self-help, but the support groups are very important because it's a very cathartic experience. But like the person that you describe who was able to uncover this, you know, sexual abuse as a child and share that, that would require, I think, some ongoing counseling with somebody very knowledgeable about leading that person through the various ways in which that wound of the heart has affected him or her.
Exactly. Like I said, in Dr. Karn's study, he found that, you know, the three top things that were needed were counseling, support and accountability, and a strong spiritual life.
Mm-hmm. So the sacramental process is very important in regard to this with Catholics.
Oh, my gosh, yes. You know, the sacrament of reconciliation, the Eucharist, you know, and there are some people who their addiction has gotten so severe that they need to have inpatient treatment. They need to go to a rehab center. And for those people, I actually recommend the anointing of the sick.
Oh, my goodness, that's great.
Yeah, so that they can have that extra grace in their healing process.
Yeah. You list two other portions of this recovery process, too, two other steps. One is education, and the other is virtue. Talk with us a little bit about those.
Okay. Well, education is needed. You know, you need to understand about addictions, the dynamics of addictions, the root causes of it, the recovery process, understanding what is healthy sexuality and what is healthy intimacy. For a lot of my clients, you know, anger is a source of their addiction, and they need to learn about forgiveness, you know, seeking it and receiving forgiveness. So there is always going to be an educational component. And then the other part is virtue. If you're going to fight a vice, you need to do it with virtue. So what are the virtues that we work on? Well, honesty, courage, patience, perseverance, transparency, faith, hope, love. So we work on growing and developing those virtues every day. You know, and let's face it, you know, that's the essence of the Christian life. If you want to avoid sin, focus on virtue in your life.
That's right. As we're talking about this, Peter, primarily in relation to the person who is practicing the pornography or involved in the pornography. But some of these same steps, I would think, would apply to the person who is with that person in the struggle, their spouse. So you would recommend all of these steps for the spouse as well?
Exactly. And they're all healing steps. Sometimes spouses may struggle with that because they think, well, you know, he caused all the trouble. Why do I have to do this recovery work?
Yes.
But I say, you know, God, you know, they've been deeply wounded too, and they didn't ask for it. They didn't deserve it or whatever, but this is where they're at. But luckily, there is a healing process. There is a path for healing and restoring their lives too.
Yeah. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but just a word, too. This doesn't just affect adults, and it doesn't just affect married couples. It also affects single individuals, which is generally where the problem begins. But it can affect our children as well. So for parents now, obviously you would recommend that they would put those types of guards on the computers and technology that their children are using. But if we discover that our child is using pornography, talk with us a little bit about intervention and how parents can approach this issue.
Okay. Well, the first thing we need to look at is prevention. You know, the average age today when a child is exposed to internet pornography is 8. So at an early age, they need to talk about their children about the dangers of the internet. You know, there's a wonderful book called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures that explains that on a fourth grade level, which is really good. So we need to have that prevention. Now, if it's discovered that your child is viewing pornography, the first thing a parent needs to do is apologize to that child, right? Apologize for not protecting the child from this. Mm. Because in many cases, particularly for young children, they really don't know what's going on. They don't know what's happening. They find themselves looking at these pictures and these videos. Yeah, they're attracted to them, but they really don't understand what's going on. So a parent needs to be really gentle and loving and compassionate with that child, apologize to that child, you know, and make the promise to the child that you're going to work on protecting them from these things in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it can be a wonderful opportunity to really educate the child on not just the dangers of pornography, but the dangers of the internet too. And this is a lesson for parents that they need to be more aware of what their children are doing online and making sure that's all being monitored.
Mm-hmm. We've had a question that's come up recently, and we're into our last minute, so I'm just going to ask you really fast and get a quick response. Someone raised the issue that a lot of the sex education being taught in school today would qualify as pornography. What do you say?
I agree, particularly in our public schools. And this has been a big problem for a long time now. And, parents, they have to decide, whether or not they want their children to participate in that. They do have the right to pull their children out of those classes. But if they do that, parents need to really take the responsibility to give their children a proper sexual education at home.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I wish we had more time. There's more to discuss. We'll just have to have you back in the near future, maybe next time, so that we can field some questions from our listeners. It's been great having you, Dr. Peter Kliponis. Get on out there to integrityrestored.com. Get to EWTN's religious catalog for Dr. Kliponis' book, Integrity Restored and Restoring Trust. God bless you now. Bye-bye.